From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I'm from San Leandro.
I'm living in Richmond.
Vallejo.
San Jose.
Oakland.
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 West Oakland, West Oakland.
I live in the bottom.
I'm in downtown Oakland.
In the bottom of 12th Street.
Coming up, controversies brewing in the town of Albany around a former landfill that 60 people call home.
I'll probably have to be leaving in an ambulance.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not interested in going anywhere.
Then a swim across the bay is just the beginning of a healthy lifestyle for a group of Native American women.
I want to live until I'm 100 years old, and I want to come down and swim again and again and again.
And a dentist tackles a lifelong nemesis.
Missing teeth, rotten teeth, bad teeth.
One smile at a time, today on Cross Currents. On the west side of the city of Albany, there's a peninsula jutting into the bay. It's beautiful there, right on the water, with hiking trails and beaches looking directly outward towards the Golden Gate Bridge. And on that piece of land, there's a broad, hilly mound covered in brush, grass, trees, scattered concrete slabs and rebar that's come to be known as the Albany Bulb. For more than a decade, people have been living illegally on the bulb, as many as 60 at latest count. Some live in tents, others have built treehouses or wood and tarp structures on stone platforms, and the city usually just lets them be. Longtime resident Catherine Cody says it's a community of people who support one another.
Out here, if I yell for help, somebody's going to come, because my neighbors care. They do, and they're going to come.
But things are changing on the bulb, and fast. And the city of Albany is poised to move the campers off the land. KALW's Mary Reese brings us the story.
Pat Moore has lived in the Albany bulb for 3 years.
I love it. It's in my element. I got the opportunity to build my camp where I live, my home, from the ground up. It was when it got there, there was a bunch of grown over weeds and trash and scrap metal, and I cleaned it up and built a nice little camp for me and my three dogs.
Some of the camps in the grass or under the trees look orderly. Others are more slapdash. There's also one mark of civilization not commonly associated with camping, a wooden shed lined with books, the community library. The makeshift neighborhood seems to be just part of the landscape for the handful of hikers and dog owners on this weekday morning. People like Maya Bush, who came here from West Oakland to let her dog run on the beach.
You know, it's nice to have a place where you can go and be left alone, and that's why the people are living here, and that's why I come here to walk my dog.
However, some people don't come out to the bulb anymore because of garbage underfoot, drug use, or neighborhood dogs that can go unchecked and be intimidating. And, according to city plans, nobody should be living here at all. It's supposed to be public parkland.
September 3rd meeting of the Albany City Council will please come to order.
In September, park advocates and bulb settlers spoke to the city council about their opposing visions for the land. One of the speakers was Robert Chastey, president of Citizens for East Shore Parks.
Camping, building structures, dwelling out there, living without plumbing, all of those things that are happening out on the bulb violate approximately 14 laws.
Albany resident Kristen Killian Lobos spoke about the danger of ignoring the use of drugs, such as meth, on the bulb.
A few years back, my beautiful, precious teenage daughter became severely addicted to methamphetamine, and she spent some time on the bulb.
But others testified to the community there. In fact, about 40 bulb residents and supporters had marched up to City Hall from the bulb that day. They outnumbered park advocates as they told the council that the campers had nowhere else to go and urged the city to let them stay, or at least stay longer while they look for housing elsewhere. Bulb dweller Steve Curry said even with public assistance, it's nearly impossible to find affordable housing in safe neighborhoods.
And I'll tell you what, SSI, it's great to have a little bit of money, and that's enough to live on, but it's not enough to live on in someplace.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
In the end, the council voted to go forward with the planned eviction, clearing the land for the McLaughlin East Shore State Park. It also decided to extend its contract for homeless services with the nonprofit Berkeley Food and Housing Project through December. The city and the Food and Housing Project then organized a services fair at the foot of the bulb in early October to help residents start finding their way to homes. The event took place here in the parking lot of Golden Gate Fields Racetrack. There weren't any horses running, but there were about a dozen tables set up with a variety of offerings: pizza and bottled water, jackets and hats, flyers and condoms.
Shirts? What size do you wear? Extra large?
Carmen Francois of the Berkeley Food and Housing Project is handing out clothes and toothbrushes. Munching on a slice of pizza, a homeless man named Dan Paul steps up for a new jacket, while his friend Andrew Franklin offers fashion advice.
Okay, email's
good. This look good on you. You have the coolest...
Yeah, he wins. That's hella nicer than that.
It has no hood.
No.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, no kidding.
Oh,
sorry, bro. My head was cold last night, man. The draft was right down my back.
Paul has lived on the bulb full-time for about 2 years. Besides the clothing, he could ask for more long-term aid at the event, like help signing up for Medi-Cal or looking for a place to rent. Since June, the Food and Housing Project social workers have been talking with Bulb residents about the kinds of help they want and where to get it. But before this fair, Paul says, he hadn't seen the social workers.
They haven't talked to me, and in fact, all of the efforts that have been to our benefit have been facilitated by ourselves.
And, Paul says, when the police start to enforce the camping ban, he doesn't plan to go without a fight.
I'll probably have to be leaving in an ambulance.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not interested in going anywhere.
He won't have a choice, according to Albany spokesperson Nicole Almaguer.
Our police department is allowed and instructed now by our city council to enforce park rules. And by park rules, that means anything from no alcohol to no camping to no storage of personal property to no campfires.
The city posted warnings in late October that structures found abandoned on the bulb may be dismantled at any time. However, Almaguer said that the camping ban will not be strictly enforced until the city's temporary shelter is ready, the week of November 18th. Those shelters are two trailers that look like mobile classrooms. They went up at the foot of the bulb in early November. Each trailer will sleep 15 people. The city will also provide a kennel for campers' dogs, showers, and some storage space. Bulb resident Amber Whitson says the shelter plan falls short.
They're going to have 30 beds in their shelter. They know that there is between 60 and 70 people out here. And that leaves the other 30-something, I guess, overflow population. Sorry, we can't do anything for you in Albany. If you're homeless here, you got to get a ticket and go to jail or leave town.
Whether or not that's the case, Whitson doesn't plan to move into the trailer.
I can't imagine going back to anything but living out here.
Change is hard, and I've really heard the things that people have said on the internet and in public statements about they have a community here.
Terry Light is executive director of the Berkeley Food and Housing Project.
And having, you know, worked with a lot of people who've lived outdoors for a long time, and then to move indoors and to move away from people you know, it's not easy.
Light says she wants to sustain the Bulb campers' sense of community. So over the next few months, her staff will continue to work with Bulb residents in or out of the shelter to find available rentals. They're also arranging for California ID cards and medical benefits or Social Security. And while Light says there was a lot of interest in finding units, by early October, only one person was housed. Catherine Cody is one of the many people who don't have housing set up yet. Around the Bulb, she goes by KC. She's been here more than 3 years, cooking communal meals on a propane stove and other equipment pulled from dumpsters. Campers who can't contribute money for food haul water or take out the trash instead. She says about a year and a half ago, the number of people at the Bulb started growing because of crackdowns on other camps in El Cerrito, Richmond, and Berkeley.
They broke up camps that were longstanding, like at Central and the freeway under the bridge there and down by the Seabreeze Motel. And they basically told people, come here. They throw them out of people's park. They tell them to come here.
Casey thinks it's created some problems.
Thieving has gone up, stealing and you know, taking people's water and just petty stuff like that. And I don't know, there's more alcohol than there was before. I'm sober now 15 years, and it gets to be a struggle to stay sober if the people around you aren't sober.
Soon, KC and the other people in her community will be forced to leave. They'll have new struggles to find safe places to live in the Bay Area, where it's hard for even middle-class wage earners to find a decent rental. Is the city of Albany doing enough as it transitions the space from makeshift neighborhood to open parkland? Many of the residents here don't think so. But are they doing enough for themselves and using the resources being provided for them? The only sure thing is that the picturesque peninsula known as the Albany Bulb will look different as winter sets in. In Albany, I'm Mary Reese for Cross Currents.
Do you think homeless people should be allowed to stay at the Albany Bulb? Let us know on our tip line, 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. And now let's dive right into the bay for our next story. Swimming to San Francisco from Alcatraz has a reputation of being almost impossible for the average person. There are tales of prisoners plotting the terrifying escape, as dramatized in the 1979 film Escape from Alcatraz.
Some men are destined never to leave Alcatraz alive. Since I've been warden, a few people have tried to escape. Most of them have been recaptured. Those that haven't have been killed.
But contrary to popular myth, the swim is possible. Just ask one of seven Native American women who signed up to swim across the bay with just 1 week of training. Facing down this swim isn't the biggest challenge they've taken on, but the idea is for it to help them tackle some of life's bigger obstacles outside the water. KALW's Angela Johnston has the story.
The sun is just beginning to rise over the glassy water at San Francisco's aquatic park. Karen Wapato is beaming as she emerges from the bay, peels off her goggles, and catches her breath.
Yeah, girl! How was it?
Oh, it was great. It was better than yesterday. I keep on just telling myself, you know, just stay calm, don't panic, keep breathing.
Wapato has never swum in the ocean before. And it's her second day swimming in the San Francisco Bay.
I can't believe I'm doing it. I can't believe I'm one of these people that swim in the bay. I've joined this elite group.
Wapato is a public health nurse on the Colville Indian Reservation. That's in Washington State. Over the past few years, she's been battling diabetes and alcoholism in the lives of her patients and her own. Then she heard about PathStar. It's an intensive week of health and wellness education, topped off with a unique challenge, a one-mile swim across the bay from Alcatraz. The idea is for the lessons of this 1 week to extend a sense of hope back to the reservation. So Wapato signed up. It's only been 2 days, but she says she's pretty sure it's already working.
I'm not going to be able to just hold this inside. This is such a wonderful experience. And if I succeed, you know, I just can't imagine being able to say I swam Alcatraz.
Almost a fifth of Native Americans and Alaskan Natives have diabetes. Back in the 90s, PathStar founder Nancy Iverson saw this firsthand. She was working as a pediatrician on a reservation in South Dakota.
It is 85 to 90% unemployment there. The life expectancy is 20 years less than the rest of the United States. So it's real live challenges all the time.
Iverson noticed people didn't see a doctor until they were really sick.
But I also noticed a mindset of thinking about more what's not available than what is possible.
And then one day, back in San Francisco, Iverson went for a long swim in the bay.
It was so dark, but I was out past Alcatraz, just coming up to the Golden Gate Bridge, when the sun was coming up, and it was so beautiful. And I looked back, and I saw my support boat with all the swimmers just silhouetted against it. And then I felt such... So at first I felt such awe. I thought, wow, it's amazing, like... all these people are out here just to see me achieve a goal.
So with help from her swimming club, Iverson created PathStar, where Native Americans could feel that same sense of support around their health. It's something Teresa Bissett really needed when she signed up for PathStar.
I have diabetes type 2. I have liver cancer, thyroid, sleep apnea. That's about it, what I have.
Bissett started training for the Alcatraz swim back home, but getting into the bay made the challenge before her even more real.
Yesterday was a very challenging day.
Still, Bissett says she's already seen the positive effects of the training.
I've lost 40 pounds, and I eat healthier. I look forward to exercising every day, and I quit smoking 3 weeks ago. And my lungs are suffering from it right now, but I think I'm going to make it.
The week of PathStar training is packed with practice swims, but also yoga sessions, cooking classes, and tours of community vegetable gardens like this one in San Francisco's Bayview neighborhood.
Wow, aren't those beautiful, those big?
All are integral to the training.
These are Canary Island date palm trees.
Date palms.
And they're very productive.
Again, PathStar founder Nancy Iverson.
It's really literally in your face with the swimming. But it also, it evolves during the week that we can start building that into other things. Like, so you skip breakfast every morning because you don't have time. So you only have a certain amount of time. So how are you going to face that challenge rather than just say you can't do it?
Hey, raise your hand if you're not a spectator, please.
By the end of the week, it's time for the big swim. It's 6 a.m. and the entire South End Rowing Club is wide awake. Over 50 volunteers and longtime swimmers are gathered in the lounge overlooking the bay.
Now, everybody's clear on how we start, right? The order is...
Each participant is paired with two experienced swimmers, or as Nancy Iverson calls them, swim angels. Their job is to guide their participant through the tides and around currents. Around 8 a.m., the PathStar swimmers board a boat to Alcatraz. Swim angels and spectators follow in kayaks and rowboats. After 8 practice swims over the past week, this will be the first time these women swim as a group from Alcatraz. At about 9 o'clock, Teresa Bissett is the first to jump into the water. Then the rest take the plunge, with swim angels by their side. Spotters follow them closely by boat to make sure all the swimmers are safe.
Sorry, I got water in my goggles.
That's okay. Looking good.
Today looks a lot like the morning that inspired Nancy Iverson to create PathStar over a decade ago. Steam is rising with the sun over the water. It's a perfect day for swimming. Slow but steady, the group makes its way across the bay. About an hour in, the swimmers reach the breakwater near Aquatic Park. And then the support kicks in even more. They're almost there. And even though some swimmers have done this before and were faster than the beginners, somehow they all end up together. And they swim the last stretch as a group, giving each other high fives and hugs as they reach the shore. For the first time all week, Teresa Bissett is glowing. Karen Wapato also stands tall, with tears of happiness.
I'm so glad, too, that each and every one of us made it, you know, that our whole team made it together, and we came in the same time. That was the happiest feeling. If any of one of us was left behind, you know, it wouldn't have been the same, but we all made it.
She says the support she's gotten this past week is what amazes her the most.
It's so heartwarming that people would do that for us, you know, make this, you know, a reality. I'm just overwhelmed, overwhelmed.
On a big scale, we just made a whole lot of dreams come true.
PathStar founder Nancy Iverson says now it's up to the swimmers to pass that sense of accomplishment onto their community. Again, PathStar participant Teresa Bissett.
I know that I can pass it on, and I want to pass it on to my family, my friends, my two sisters, I'm going to make sure that I have a healthy liver, and I want to rebuild that liver, and I want to live until I'm 100 years old. And I want to come down and swim again, and again and again.
For most people, this one-mile swim from this prison island is about escape and freedom. And in a way, it is for these swimmers, too. They thought it wasn't possible. But now they know it is. In San Francisco, for Cross Currents, I'm Angela Johnston.
November 20th is the 44th anniversary of the Native American occupation of Alcatraz. You can find more information about that and about PathStar on our website, kalw.org. Click on Cross Currents. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. And now another story from our community storytelling project, Hear Here.
Here?
Here?
Here.
Here.
Okay, together. Okay.
Here, here.
From KALW.
Dr. Pamela Alston was raised in Emeryville, along with her 8 brothers and sisters. She noticed something particular about the place where she was growing up.
In my neighborhood, it seemed to me like the most prevalent health problem was bad teeth. Missing teeth, rotten teeth. And I felt like if there was anything I could do to help my community, it would be to treat their teeth.
So she went to dental school. Today, Dr. Alston is the dental director of the Eastmont Wellness Center in East Oakland. She's seen a lot of patients in the 30-plus years she's been a dentist. And once she saw a patient that reminded her a little bit of herself. She shared that story with our Hear Here community storytelling project at the Cesar Chavez Branch Library in Oakland.
There was a teenager who came in. She was a drop-in patient. She presented with a permanent tooth that was rotten all the way down to the gum line. That is what gave me great pause. She had suffered with that toothache for so long, and she had dealt with it by, when she started to feel the pain, usually it was accompanied by swelling, and she had gotten into the habit of bursting the abscess with a stick pin, and the toothache would go away. It had been at least 7 or 8 years since she had seen a dentist. And the thing is that before a tooth rots down to the gum line, you know, you see the signs. You see a big hole in the tooth. You can't eat certain things. Why hadn't her parents picked up on it? So when I called her parents in, it turned out that only her dad was in the waiting room. I learned that her mom had passed away when she was 5 years old. I learned that she had other siblings, and her dad was a day laborer, and that her dad had brought her in that day because that was when she finally confessed to him that she had a toothache. He had no idea. And I was scared for her because it was a swelling that you could see on the outside of her face. And those are infections that can become life-threatening. When I explained that to her dad, this stoic man started crying. He had absolutely no idea. And as I observed her, she reminded me of myself because I had the same permanent tooth removed at an earlier age, actually, than she was, when I was a child. And I wasn't neglected either. I didn't tell my mother because I wanted to hold on to that tooth as long as possible. And I felt like if I treated it myself, you know, and I know about that stick pin,
that I could hold on to it. I knew nothing about prevention. And that is what set me on that trajectory to becoming somebody who could make a difference to children like I was.
That story was produced by Anne Huang and Audrey Dilling for our community storytelling project, Hear, Hear. Listen to more stories from the project at klw.org. Click Cross Currents. That's it for today's Cross Currents. The team includes David Boyer, Jeremy Dalmas, Audrey Dilling, Chris Hoff, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Liz Pfeffer, Stephen Short, and Mary Willis. Today's show was engineered by Seth Samuel. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Our senior producer is Martina Castro. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Holly Kernan is our news director. And thanks to you, we are listener-supported radio.
On my side.
You're listening to the New Thoreaus. They're playing for free this Thursday evening at the Mission Community Market in San Francisco. Show starts at 6:30. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.
But the luck ain't drawn. We'll put aside. Your lips were glasses of vintage wine. I got drunk.